Chapter 33 Nalani's lightsaber blow was lightning quick, but by the time it landed, the older woman had twirled to one side, positioning herself behind a bust. The glowing blade sliced off the marble top of the head of some long-dead Rhodian scholar. Nalani advanced. Lumia retreated, slapping her thigh, digging her fingers through the cloth and into her thigh. She yanked, and suddenly in her hands was a whip. She flicked it back, preparatory to striking with it. Its tendrils, for there were several instead of just one, spread out into something that moved like a weaponized cloud, some of them shining iron-like and jagged, some of them glowing like a lightsaber's blade. Lumia cracked the weapon forward. Nalani, her body language suggesting confusion as she faced this unusual weapon, twisted to one side. But one of the lashes, a metal one, grazed her face, drawing blood all along her left cheek. Nalani took a step back, shaking her head.
"I don't just talk, Jedi girl," Lumia said. "And you'll notice, unlike you, I don't strike at a target who doesn't have a weapon in hand."
"Let Lumia talk," Jason said.
"Can't you feel yourself wavering?"
There was a shrill tone of desperation in Nalani's voice.
"She's bending your mind, bending your will."
Jason shook his head. "No, she's not. If I'm wavering, it's before a presentation of fact, not mind tricks. Come on, Nalani. If mind tricks were involved, don't you think you'd feel them?"
"Here's the truth about the difference between Jedi and Sith," Lumia said.
"Shut up!"
Nalani lunged forward again, spinning her lightsaber into a defensive shield. Lumia's light whip flicked around the edges of the shield. Ends of several tendrils wrapped into Nalani's chest and right bicep, creating small blood and burn spots. Nalani cried out and danced back again, baffled by the older woman's superior technique.
"Both Jedi and Sith gravitate toward rule," Lumia continued. "But the Jedi believe it's contrary to their nature, so they create guidelines that are only supposed to govern their own actions, until the inevitable day when the secular governments fall so short of Jedi ideals that they feel they have to impose their own rules on the others to save them. That's what happened at the end of the Old Republic. But the rules they put together are strange, ascetic, not designed for ordinary people, and they can't be sustained as a form of government. The Sith recognize from the start that they can choose to impose their rule on others, or not. If society is functioning well, a Sith doesn't have to act. Vectivus didn't. If it's not, he should act. And since he knows that fixing a broken government is his mission, he can design a system of government that works, that is fair, orderly."
Nalani gestured with her free hand. The bust of Darth Vectivus's mother flew forward, hurtling toward Lumia like a marble missile. Lumia flicked her light whip toward it, and 9 or 10 tendrils converged on it. The bust exploded into countless marble shards, raining down on the floor.
"The galaxy is dissolving into chaos," Lumia said. "Its leadership can't save it. They're the leftovers of what failed 15 years ago during the Yuuzhan Vong War. The Jedi can't step in and fix things. You know their methods, the way they think. What has Luke Skywalker told you? Have his tactics, his recommendations fixed anything? No. As good a man as he is, he and his order are just tools of the Galactic Alliance."
Nalani tried again, this time with the bust of the Bothan. It reached a halfway point between her and Lumia, but the older woman reached out with her own free hand, and the bust stopped in midair. Now it strained forward toward her. A moment later, it crept back through the air toward Nalani. It was a piece in a game of push of war between the women, and neither was winning. The strain showed in Lumia's voice, causing it to hoarsen.
Vergere sacrificed herself so you could assume the Sith mantle she wanted for you. That's the kind of self-sacrifice no Jedi would admit is possible for the Sith. But it's the truth. Take what I have to teach you, Jason. Take this place and the dark side power it contains. Take the knowledge that rests in its tombs on the world of Zeost, and use them against the forces that are trying to tear this galaxy apart. Restore order. Give your cousin, give the children in your family and your life the chance to grow up in a galaxy without war.
You're still withholding the truth, Jason said. His voice was hard now, his manner uncompromising, unconfused. You killed the security chief on Toriaz Station, didn't you?
Yes, she said. Of course. I caught up to him too late to prevent the attack on you. It was already underway. But I could force from him an admission of who he was working for, and avenge the dead.
Who was he working for?
Thrakken Sal Solo. Who else?
And all those situations on Lord. You didn't dream about them, did you? You had direct access to the perpetrators. Lumia cast a sideways glance at the bust hovering between her and Nellani. It was beginning to creep back toward her, and the strain of keeping it at bay was showing on her face.
Yes, my visions were waking visions. I could have interfered directly with their plans, probably with exactly the same results you experienced.
Why didn't you?
I used them as a test for you.
Lumia closed her eyes and strained, but the bust still moved toward her.
Sith, like Jedi, have to determine the fates of others. Unlike Jedi, they know that sometimes this means sacrificing one so that 20 may live. I had to find out whether you understood that. And you do!
How about your confederate? Jason asked. The man Master Skywalker keeps glimpsing but can't quite see. The man he says doesn't exist?
Lumia managed a laugh that was half-exhausted gasp.
Jason, that's you. Visions of you. The Sith you will become. Luke can't make out his features, because he's not willing to accept what he sees through the Force. Your face, where the next Lord of the Sith stands.
Her last words were little more than a gasp, and her control slipped at that point. The bust of the Bothan hurtled toward her. She cracked her whip at it, a foreshortened stroke that might have missed in any case, but the bust's trajectory changed, sending the statuary beneath the tendrils. Instead of striking Lumia's head or chest, the bust cracked into her right hand, sending the whip spinning from her grip. Its tendrils twisted across the floor like living things, scarring it with their passage. Nellani leapt forward, slashing at her enemy. Her blade came down on Jason's. His blade held hers. His eyes held her eyes.
I'm not through here, he said.
There was despair in Nellani's voice.
I don't know how, but she's turning you. Can't you see it?
Stop listening with just your ears, Jason said. Look into the Force. Do you really see any flow from her to me? From me to her? Something that could alter my mind or my perceptions?
Nellani held his gaze for a moment more, then closed her eyes. For that moment, she was vulnerable to a counterattack. But Jason merely kept his blade before hers. Lumia did not attack, did not even summon her whip back to her. She merely held her forearm and hand where the bust had hit them. Finally, Nellani's eyes opened again, and she seemed calmer.
No, she admitted. Lumia isn't using any Force techniques against you. You're not being influenced by the dark side energies here. I don't understand what's happening.
Turn off your lightsaber, Jason said. She did. He turned his own off. Now the only sound of menace came from Lumia's light whip. The older woman looked at the weapon, and the glowing tendrils faded to darkness, to almost invisible threads.
"There," Jason said. "Now we can work things out."
"Yes."
Nelani turned toward Lumia.
"Shirabri, I arrest you in the name of the Galactic Alliance. You will be tried for—"
"No," Jason said. "I've decided to learn what she has to teach me. That means she needs to remain free. To remain here."
Nelani looked at him, disbelieving.
"Jason, the law—"
"The law is what we make of it." He shrugged. "She has said she's Lumia, Nelani, but she hasn't proven it. All we have to do is not believe her, to leave that claim out of our reports, and we've followed the letter of the law."
Nelani moved slightly, stepping back, bringing the hilt of her lightsaber a few centimeters up.
"I am arresting her."
Lumia interrupted.
"I'll consent to be arrested."
Both of the Jedi looked at her.
"You will?" Jason asked.
"Of course."
Lumia looked sober, unhappy.
"I know my fate is no longer my own. I want to see the Sith rise, with you at the head of the Order, Jason, and for that reason I swear myself to your service."
She knelt as she spoke, lowering her head, an invitation for a blessing or for a killing stroke.
"But whichever one of you is in charge here will choose my fate, my future."
Her voice low, Nelani said,
"Put your hands behind your back."
As Lumia obeyed, Nelani pulled a pair of stun cuffs from her belt pouch. Jason frowned. There was something wrong about this situation, and for a moment he suspected treachery on Lumia's part. But a glimpse into the likely immediate future dispelled that notion. He saw Lumia obedient, unresisting, being led back to the shuttle. His mind flickered forward through the likely time streams. The future, as Yoda had said so frequently and famously that the quotation littered the Jedi archives, was always in motion. And many potential futures led from this event. But they began congregating in certain areas. Nelani testifying against Shirabri, also known as Lumia, also known as Lumia Sio. Lumia convicted, being executed, being locked up in solitude, being locked up in a mass prison and assassinated by someone whose father she had killed decades ago. All she knew vanishing, dying with her. All along these paths, the galaxy continued to come unhinged, rebellion sparking in all corners, the Galactic Alliance crumbling, like a cancer-racked body, eating itself from the insides out, whole populations dying. Detonators destroying this place, blowing the asteroid into millions of pieces, scattering the knowledge hidden here. An ancient star destroyer raining turbolaser destruction down on the surface of Zeost, purging it of knowledge lingering there. Scores of timelines congregated on Jason Solo and Luke Skywalker, bringing them together. The two of them faced each other, their surroundings changing every second as the scene slipped from timeline to timeline. Yet their poses and the lightsabers lit in their hands remained the same, as did the anger and tragic loss twisting both their faces. They spun, they struck, the impacts of their lightsabers causing flares of light to cast the walls and floors behind them into greater darkness. On and on they fought, their loss giving them strength, until Jason cut Luke down. Sometimes it was a blow across the shoulder, down into the chest. Sometimes it was a slash, too fast to see, across the throat, that sent the older man's head from his shoulders. Sometimes it was a thrust to the stomach, followed by minutes of agony, Luke writhing in a futile struggle for life, while Jason, tears running down his cheeks, knelt nearby. Luke died. Luke died.
No,
Jason whispered. He summoned himself back to the here and now. Nalani and Lumia were walking away. The younger woman held the older by the shoulder, guiding her. Jason lit his lightsaber and struck. Nalani jumped away, but the glowing blade merely parted the cuffs that held Lumia's hands together behind her back. Both women looked at him.
She remains free, Jason told Nalani. If you take her...
He could not say the rest of the words. Luke dies, and I kill him. There was more to it than that. For a moment he was drawn back into the streams of probability that led him into the future. Nalani could leave without her prisoner. She would return home to Lord and tell all to her superiors, to Luke. Jason cut Luke down. Luke died. Nalani could be persuaded not to tell. She would rethink her promise later and break it, telling all to Luke. Jason cut Luke down. Luke died. Only in the time streams where Nalani fell, never to rise, did Luke remain on his feet, in command, alive. Other tragedies, shadowy and indistinct, swirled around him, but he lived. Jason returned again to the present. The truth of what he had just experienced through the Force numbed him. But it was the truth, and he had to be strong enough to face it. Lumia knew it, or had some sense of it. There were tears on her cheeks to match the ones he felt on his own.
There is this about being Sith, she told him. We strengthen ourselves through sacrifice.
Jason nodded, grudging acceptance of that fact.
Yes.
Nalani looked at him, and beyond him, into his intent. With a noise that was half moan, she turned and fled. Jason raced after her. Relidir, Trollis. More missiles poured into the downtown area that had surrounded the Center for the Performing Arts. The spotter droids on the ground didn't direct them to the crater that had been the Galactic Alliance beachhead. Instead, they sent the missiles toward enemies in the skies, the starfighters of the Galactic Alliance. Han rose toward one of them, the X-Wing whose transponder signaled Trago F-1103. Trollis Ground Occupation Forces Number 1103, on frequency 22NF07. His progress was not easy, fast, or safe. The skies were still cluttered with Galactic Alliance starfighters, and a surprising number of them seemed intent on shooting him down. They dived at him and rose toward him, firing lasers. A vengeful interceptor pilot even tried to ram him, a tactic that would have constituted suicide had Han not sideslipped and allowed the tiny high-speed fighter to roar through the space he had just occupied. Han's intent was simple. Get close enough to his daughter that missiles chasing her would abort, would turn away to find new targets. In the few moments he had to watch her, moments when he wasn't ducking incoming laser fire, he saw that she was doing pretty well on her own. Her X-Wing, moving higher and higher in the sky, dipped and fluttered, firing its own lasers at Corellian attack fighters and Vigilance interceptors. Those starfighters tended to veer away smoking or detonate, leaving oddly peaceful and colorful clouds in the sky. Missiles roared toward her from the front. She sideslipped, and they missed, or fired her lasers and they detonated, eliminating the missiles around them in an explosive act of fratricide. Missiles roared toward her from the side, the back. She eluded them, now rising, now dipping, an indestructible leaf caught in a speed of sound wind, and the missiles shot past. Sometimes another X-Wing rode at her wing, supporting her tactics with movements that were eerie in their instantaneous adjustment, in their perfect complementarities. Once a trio of missiles roaring toward her from the starboard side detonated 200 meters from her X-Wing for no reason Han could see. Had they hit shrapnel? Had Jaina destroyed them with a flip of her hand and a force technique? Han didn't know. He did realize two things. The first was that as fast as he climbed, as fast as he could afford to climb while being pestered by enemy pilots, she was rising faster. The second was a more painful realization, which settled on him like a weighted net wrapping itself around a tired swimmer. She didn't need him. She was a brilliant pilot with a brilliant wingman. She was older than Han had been when he'd pitted the Millennium Falcon against pilots from the first Death Star, and was more experienced. Part Han, part Leia, and all herself, she dominated the air around her. Mixed in his heart were pride and pain in the discovery that she had outgrown him. Green laser fire flashed from the vicinity of his starboard hull, and an incoming howl runner exploded. Snapped back to the here and now, Han looked to starboard and port, realized that he was flanked by two attack fighters on either side, and almost jumped out of his seat. But they were green on his sensor board. Friendlies. Wedge's voice was in his ears, and Han realized it had been there for some time. "What was that, one?"
"We have escorts out of the combat zone," Wedge said. "You should be picking yours up now." "They're here." "We have to leave the zone, too. The enemy still has numerical superiority, and we're not in fighters. Also, I think the really nimble X-Wing up top is your daughter. It would be a carking shame to be shot down by your own daughter, wouldn't it?"
Han laughed. It was a brittle noise.
"It sure would. All right, lead me out of here. Speaking of daughters, I need to talk to you." "Go ahead. Later, back at base." "Whatever you say."
Across long minutes, the battle over Relidir moved farther and farther away from downtown. The incoming missiles were spent against the Center for the Performing Arts, against starfighters too slow or luckless to elude them, against each other, when a random detonation would claim an entire flight of them. Sial kept her attention on the skies beyond her viewport. She ached all over, and could taste blood in her mouth.
"How's it look?"
she asked. Zweb, kneeling in his chair, facing backward, pulled his hands and face out of the mess of dislodged circuits and wiring he'd been working with. He gave her a noncommittal look.
"Not good." "Will we make orbit?"
"Orbit, yes."
The Sulliston shrugged.
"But no hull integrity. Blow up a balloon and let it go to fly around venting air? That's us."
"Plug our suits in for direct atmosphere and power for heating. We'll put up with a few minutes of cold."
"Yes, boss."
Zweb fiddled around behind their seats, plugging both their flights into power and air suppliers, then turned around and settled into his chair. He uttered a bark of pain.
"Ow! Think I have no spine left."
"You had one to begin with?"
"Not nice."
Zweb strapped in. Sial brought the engines up. They whined, unnaturally loud, the noise strained and wrong. But the diagnostics board indicated that they were supplying power to the thrusters. Gently, slowly, Sial lifted off, pointed the Aleph's battered nose away from the portions of the sky where combat was still thick, and accelerated.
"We lost this one,"
she said.
"You did great."
"I'm a great loser."
"I fly with great loser any day. Also, Lieutenant Baradas thinks you're really good-looking."
"What?"
"Said so in mess yesterday."
"You're trying to take my mind off all this."
"Yes. Am doing a good job?"
"No,"
She frowned.
Baradas, huh?
Don't see it myself. Human head's too tiny to be good-looking.
She grinned.
Shut up.
Star System MZX-32905, near Bimiel. Nalani ran with the speed of a trained athlete, but as soon as she passed beyond the cavern where Darth Vectivus's house stood and where the artificial gravity generator operated, her gait became inefficient, her leaps too long. She didn't have Jason's experience with low gravity. He began to catch up to her. She bounded up along the rails, toward the surface habitat, her lightsaber giving her enough light to see the cross rungs where she needed to place her feet. Jason saw spots of blood on some of those rungs, evidence of the injury Lumia's whip had inflicted on her. The rails rose through a gap in the cavern ceiling, and beyond that point, Jason could no longer see Nalani. He left his own lightsaber on, but closed his eyes, seeking her with his force senses, and there she was, hurtling toward him in the leg-forward posture of a vicious sidekick. Not looking in her direction, he twisted aside and swatted at her with his lightsaber. He put no strength behind his blow. He didn't need to. The blade caught her on the inner thigh, slicing through cloth and skin and muscle. She shrieked, flew past him, hit the stony surface of this cavern floor, and rolled, in the curious way that low gravity mandated, to a halt. He bounced toward her, slow, sure, and predatory. When he reached her, she was sitting, unable to stand, her now lit lightsaber in her right hand, her right leg, now useless, beneath her. He could see part of the wound, black with cauterized flesh and blood. She looked up, the pain on her face made more stark by the glaring brightness of both their blades.
"Jason, don't do this,"
she said.
"You don't understand what's at stake."
"I'm not concerned with living or dying,"
she told him.
"I surrendered my fate to the Force when I joined the Order. It's you. If you do this, you'll become something bad. Something destructive."
"A Sith?"
"No. Call it whatever you want to. What do you call someone who kills without needing to? Someone who joins sides with evil because of a well-reasoned argument?"
He stood there and looked at her, and was battered by emotions. His, hers, lingering dark side energies from thousands of years before. Her health and beauty, which had been marred, and which he would mar further. Her despair and disillusionment, which were almost palpable energies, scarring his nerves like sanding surfaces. A deep sorrow settled across him. Sorrow at the tragedy being perpetrated. In Nalani's myriad futures, he could dimly glimpse good and kind acts, love, perhaps family and children. He was about to cut through the connective tissues between Nalani and those futures, and he could feel the pain of that cut. In a way, the sensation was almost comforting, reminding him that he was still possessed of human emotion, of human values.
"Nalani," he said, "I'm sorry. You're a deflector that would send the future spinning into tragedy. And you're too young, too weak to understand it, to correct it."
"Jason,"
he struck, a slash that turned into a twirl binding her blade. The maneuver disarmed her, leaving her arm untouched, but spinning her lightsaber off into the darkness. He struck again, a surgical thrust that entered the precise center of her breastbone, emerged from her spine. Jason pulled the lightsaber free. Nalani slumped to the side, and he felt her begin to vanish into the Force. Until she finished her slow fall and her head lolled against the stone, her eyes did not leave his.